Give us another time to expire, not even know.
Right. All right, so we're ready on the merit case of Bonilla. Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think I'll just go through it.
All right, that's fine. We're ready when you are, ma'am.
Your Honors, if the court were to uphold the trial court's ruling on the motion to suppress in this case, it would broaden the idea of what we consider to be reasonable, articulable suspicion, the idea that it is reasonable to stop you if you're just near the scene of the crime and you match the race and the gender is all that matters. Your clothes don't even have to match. Just the race and the gender would be enough.
Counsel, I get what you're saying, and I hear what you're saying. But I think the thing is what we need to kind of sort out here. And obviously, if we have a situation where there is a determination that someone should be stopped based upon their race, that's clearly a problem. Obviously, that's a problem from any context. But in this situation, there seems to be a whole lot more. You've got the be on the lookout reference. You've got the officer's experience in working that area. And then you've got other things that are going on to suggest that this officer might want to indeed confront these two individuals, at least to figure out what's going on in the nature of an investigative situation.
Closeness in location, closeness in time, two people in proximity.
Yeah, all of those things. What would be your response to that, Counsel?
Several, Your Honor. To begin with, I'd like to talk about the officer's experience, because just because an officer takes the stand and says, my training and experience, and then gives some statements that follow that, that does not mean that everything they say is golden and true. This officer...
Well, at this stage in the proceedings, given the standard of review,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Well, Your Honor, there is not a finding of fact on the record that about this particular fact.
Well,
and I don't think that there is...
But in the absence of an express finding of fact one way or the other, don't we have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the prevailing party?
Well, I think that you can view the light most favorable and listen to what ultimately he said. My experience in this neighborhood is that it's mostly blacks and whites. However, it's not unusual for me to see Hispanics in this area. I don't know whether any Hispanics live in this area. I don't know. It could be Hispanics that live right there. So take all of that. I'm asking the court not to take one piece. Take everything that he said and use that in the light most favorable to the government. The light most favorable to the government, he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's where we are. He doesn't know who lives there. That's what he said. So if we're going to take his testimony on that, we can't really credit that part of it that much. It's a heavily foot-trafficked area. It is not a gated-off community. There's King Street, which is two blocks over. There's several businesses. There are bus lines. There are the trolley line. People go through here all the time. It's not unusual to see anybody who's Hispanic walking through the area. So in addition to that, what we have is a crime that was reported 15 minutes or a crime that occurred 15 minutes. The dispatch time doesn't really matter. The issue is when the crime occurred. It occurred approximately 15 minutes prior, a block and a half away. And so we have a significant amount of time in which people could be other places. It's not like it's one single minute or 30 seconds thereafter.
Where do you get the 15-minute timeline?
I get the 15-minute timeline when we look to the 268 in the appendix, which has the incident report in, and puts the call in at 2144 hours and 56 seconds. So that's approximately 9:45 p.m. And then you have Officer Malone's testimony that he only saw the individual there for about a minute 43. When he got there, he only saw them, I think, in under a minute. And that's in the transcript, and he said that he radioed once he went hands-on with appellant. So that's only about a minute and a half. And when that radio shows up in 268, that is him radioing subject stopped. As the dispatcher dispatcher testified, those entries are going simultaneously with that information. So that's where the timeline comes from. What Officer Malone sees is two Hispanic males, arguably whether they're together or not, is unclear. One is on the sidewalk. One is in the street when he first sees them. He never sees them interact with one another at any point in time. The other individual is not walking.
Is from the evidence, is one following the other? Does it appear from the evidence?
He never saw where the other came from. So.
Well, in the short period of time he sees them, one's cutting between the cars, and one, if I recall the record correctly, says one is cutting between the cars going in the direction of the other. Is that accurate?
His testimony is that he sees the first individual. The first time he sees the first individual is in the street.
Right.
And the second individual he sees on the sidewalk.
Beginning towards the cars is my understanding.
Correct. Once that individual steps off the sidewalk and in between the cars, cars that he never saw the other individual go between, that's when he has his interaction with that individual. So I don't think that...
But he is leaving the sidewalk heading in the general direction of the person in the street.
He is leaving the sidewalk, correct. So what he sees is two Hispanic males. He sees... individuals, one of them is wearing white. The bolo is for Hispanic males, black shirt, black cap. It doesn't get further away from black than white. He sees one who's wearing white. A parent has on clothing that he does not, he makes no note of the clothing whatsoever. However, the further information is included in the record, and what's in the record is that appellant is wearing white as well. Additionally, the clothing doesn't match at all. He doesn't see appellant doing anything at all suspicious. He's just walking. He's not behaving nervously. The bolo is for two Hispanic males running. He doesn't see him running. He doesn't see him walking fast. He doesn't see him acting nervous. He doesn't see him out of breath. He doesn't see him sweating. He doesn't see any of those things. Just walking normally. When he stops, that's all the evidence he has. What he should have done is tried to engage in a consensual encounter. That's what he should have done. He didn't have enough evidence for reasonable articulable suspicion. He didn't have enough at that point. Because of that, the motion to suppress should have been granted. We look at...
If the officer had said, hey, can I talk to you, and the first guy runs as he did when he told them to stop, does that change the analysis in your mind?
I think it changes the analysis in regards to the other guy. It's reasonable articulable suspicion that is particularized to an individual. That other person running down the street... Headlong flight, of course, is a factor that would go towards reasonable articulable suspicion to that person. And so, no, I don't think that makes it Mr. Bonilla more suspicious to the police officer when Mr. Bonilla didn't do anything. When we're looking at the cases, for instance, the case that's cited by the Commonwealth is United States versus Moore. In that case, the burglary alarm went off in the church and the defendant was stopped nearby. No description had been given, but there was nobody else there. It had only been 3 minutes that had passed, and the reason that the dispatch is important in that case because it's a burglary alarm that goes straight to dispatch. That would have been roughly around the time that the alleged crime had occurred. As I told the court earlier, it's been 15 minutes in this case. That case says that the defendant was nearby the door of the building, and here we're talking about a block and a half away. The time in that case was near midnight. Here we're talking about 10 p.m., That's not an unreasonably late time for people to be walking around in an area such as Old Town Alexandria, not in a residential area, not an area where there's a lot of dust roots. In Stokes, a case that I cited to the court, it's 30 minutes after the robbery. It's 9:30 p.m. It's a residential area, and it's a very similar description as it is in here. Black male, black top. There's no height, no weight, no car description, and the court says, no, that's not enough. Your description is so generalized as to not be able to stop anyone. That meets so many different people that you don't have the ability, it's not particularized to stop anyone. It covers such a vast amount of people.
How do you deal with the analysis in the case of United States versus Moore? It's a Fourth Circuit case, 1987. And it says, quote, the police can consider such circumstances as proximity to the scene of a recently committed crime, time of day, and physical characteristics, including racial identity.
I think that they can consider all of those characteristics. The court doesn't say, it says they can consider them, it doesn't say that they're sufficient. So what we have here is proximity of being a block and a half. We have time as being 15 minutes, we have race as being Hispanic, and we have gender as being male, and then we have clothing that doesn't match at all. So essentially what I would say is that our new standard is all people matching the gender and the race. It doesn't matter what your age is, that doesn't need to be specific. You don't need to tell anybody how tall they are or facial hair or how much they weigh. Just gender and race, and if you're in that area, you are now subject to a Terry stop. That would be what the cases would be holding, and I think definitely there are factors that the court would consider. This case did not reach that level. And Brown, I think Brown was similar in that case when the court in that case was asking, well, what did you have to match the description? We had dark clothing, black male. The court says, that's it? Yeah, well, that's what the description was. Well, that's similar here. That's it. All they have is black males, dark clothing. In that case, it was within minutes that they saw them at the location where the person said, hey, the people who robbed me are right there at that location, 22nd and Lombard Streets. They go there, but their description is too vague. And it's too general to stop, and the court suppressed that.
You're not suggesting that in this context that the officer did not have the ability to engage in an investigative stop?
A Terry stop?
Yes.
Yes, I am suggesting that the officer did not have reasonable, I'm explicitly arguing that the officer did not have reasonable, articulable suspicion. Not that there wasn't reasonable, articulable suspicion that a crime had occurred, but there wasn't reasonable, articulable suspicion particularized to Mr. Bonilla that he was the perpetrator of such crime based on the broad description.
What would you suggest would have been needed here to get to the threshold that the government would need to reach?
Clothing that matched it all would be something that would be helpful because the description is for black clothing and he sees white clothing. So I think that that would be, I think that that's a strong factor that cuts against why this isn't reasonable. Some type of description of height or age or weight or anything to help narrow the class of individuals down to just being a Hispanic male. Something that would add to his suspicion for the individual, like the individual is behaving in such a way that many of the cases suggest nervous fidgets or avoidance of the police. He didn't testify to anything like that. He said that he was just walking and he stepped in the street. He didn't try to blade or hide his body from me. He was just right there. I drove up to him. I saw everything. Something that would suggest that to support that him as an individual was engaged in criminal activity, not just that he was in the area.
So, again, we get to the point where if you have a situation where you have an Hispanic male who happens to be walking down the street with his girlfriend, and they're just walking down the street, that doesn't meet the general bolo that was sent out to Hispanic males. But in this case, there were actually two Hispanic males who were together, who were then seen together in an area that the officer thought may relate to the situation. Again, obviously in these cases, there's no bright line test as to what is enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to kind of get a feel as to where we can actually come up with some sort of identifying circumstance which would tip the scales one way or the other.
They don't match the description because they're wearing white.
Okay.
That would tip the scales.
So if they were in dark clothing.
That would be helpful. I would still be here, I'm sure. But my argument would be weaker. They're wearing white. That tips the scales because they're looking for black.
Okay.
Does
the fact that clothing can be easily removed and dropped on the street play into the analysis at all?
I think that it could play into the analysis. There was no evidence of that, though. That would just be conjecturing speculation.
Was anything found on the ground next to them?
Not prior to the stop.
Okay. Well, right, but I'm just saying, you can't use it to justify the stop.
Correct.
Everyday experience, one could think that somebody could remove an article of clothing.
That might be true, but there was no evidence in the record. The officer didn't testify to his training experience of that. There was no evidence in the record to support that. Additionally, dealing with the arrest or allegation that there was, in fact, an arrest, the question is whether that conduct has elevated to a point where it's so intrusive to qualitatively, quantitatively change this experience from just a stop. We are arguing that this was, in fact, not a stop, but was an arrest at either one or two points.
Given that we have allowed handcuffing and Terry stops, especially with the gunshot, mm-hmm. given that we have allowed officers to draw the weapon, tell people to get on the ground, and that still be a Terry stop, it seems to me the distinction has always been, it isn't that we've stopped you, I mean, which is kind of inherent in a detention or stop. Mm-hmm. The difference when it becomes a full custodial arrest is what can be done to you once it has occurred. Nothing was done outside of the normal Terry stop questions at that point. I mean, there was no full investigatory search until after the conversation, correct?
That is correct, that there was no search until after the conversation. However, it's definitely our position that it elevated to the rest because of the officer's conduct and what he said.
You agree that there are cases from this court and from federal courts, I can pull the gun on you, I can tell you to get down on the ground, and it still be a Terry stop, correct?
There are some cases that exist to that effect.
All right. How is this more intrusive or invasive than that?
An individual is walking down the street. The officer comes up in his canine unit. It's not the presence of the dog. I'm not here arguing that it's the presence of the dog. I wouldn't be arguing that it's the fact that he has withdrawn his gun. And Bethea is just a case where he ordered him out the car, but in Wells, it says that he drew his gun. It doesn't say that he pointed his gun at him. It doesn't say that he said, I'm going to shoot you if you do not consent to said Terry stop. This is different than that because his first contact, unnecessarily so, is one of physical violence. His first statement to him, unnecessarily so, is one where he threatens to inflict bodily harm upon him. That type of statement qualitatively changes what this interaction is about. You will comply, or we are at the level where it's fine for me to let my dog start chomping on your limbs. That's not a Terry stop. And so when he has that conversation with him and then goes out from there and immediately grabs onto him, becoming physical with him.
When the officer pulls his weapon and says, stop, get down on the ground, is there not an implied message in that if you do not comply, I will use the weapon?
I don't think necessarily.
Because if an officer pulls a weapon on me and tells me to get down on the ground, I'm assuming if I don't do it, I'm going to get shot.
I think there's a lot of use of force that you're not allowed to just shoot a fleeing person that's not causing threat to you. But I think that if the officer tells you, I will shoot you, then yes. And that's like in this case when the officer says, I'm going to send my dog on you, that it's explicit. I don't necessarily think that just because the officer says get down on the gun that it's implicit that you will be shot. I'm sure a lot of people will think that, but there's a variety of laws and statutes that cover that misuse of force. But in this case, the officer made very clear what the use of force would be.
And I realize you have other points. You don't have additional time. And so we'll, of course, consider the things you've raised in your brief.
Yes. Thank you.
Ms. Bloom?
May it please the Court, Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the Appellate of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Here there are many factors, not just the defendant's ethnicity that were considered in the stop.
The critical thing, though, is the ethnicity. It seemed that the officer himself focused on the ethnicity of the individuals involved as the precursor for him actually getting involved with this.
But it's an objective standard, Your Honor, for reasonable suspicion. And here what we have is be on the lookout out for two Hispanic males going in the same direction. These individuals were seen going in the same direction as having traveled southbound on Patrick Street, which is exactly where the robbery took place. No one else matching that description was in the area. It was 1 minute later, and the officer testified it was 1 minute after he heard the be on the lookout that he actually encountered and stopped these two individuals.
How long from the time, what does the record tell us, how long from the time the offense actually occurred till the officer sees them? There's a claim of 15 minutes. I noticed the appendix sites were early, and I know there was different testimony at trial than there was at the suppression hearing, and I know you're entitled. What is the Commonwealth's position about how long from the actual event, the robbery in the taxi cab, to
the encounter?
Well, I would say that the inferences that the appellant has made on these issues are not necessarily supported by the record, and the court made a factual finding that it was within minutes. Within minutes
where,
of the robbery.
Where in the record can I find that finding?
It's, I believe when the court makes its finding, he says within minutes. It was within minutes. It's 204. I just had it, and unfortunately, I have to pass it. Here we go. 2. Give me just a minute. I'll point it to you.
I can search for within minutes.
It's within minutes. He makes the specific statement that it was within minutes. Now, on page, 245, the officer says, at trial, he says within 1 minute. At the suppression hearing, he said within 2 or 3 minutes. But he clarified that he went back and checked the records at trial and said that it was within 1 minute. So he went back and checked the actual...
Appendix 150 and 153 make those kind of references.
Thank you. In any event, 1 minute later, he testifies at trial. He said he was in error when he testified at the suppression hearing and that he went back and looked at the records to check.
Doesn't
and I will say the records aren't entirely clear.
Doesn't your perspective, though, give the law enforcement the ability in situations like this to confront any Hispanic males who may be happening to walk down that street during that time frame, doesn't it basically give you that, the law enforcement, that prerogative under your example?
No, because it was not just that there were any Hispanic males walking down the street. One was walking at a brisk pace, and the crucial factor here is that they were walking together. They appeared to be walking together in the same direction, one walking at a very brisk pace, cutting through cars in between, and in the same direction as having just left the robbery. So you can't divorce the one factor from all the other in a reasonable suspicion inquiry.
Ms. Boyne, everything about this is exactly the same. Testimony about the neighborhood, everything is exactly the same, but the perpetrators were two white males and walking down Patrick Street. Given what the testimony is about who frequents the neighborhood, is the outcome any different?
No, it shouldn't be any different. I mean, if the testimony was, this is a neighborhood that there are, I don't think this is a crucial issue, but if the testimony was, this is a neighborhood in which there are not usually two white people walking down the street.
I mean, the testimony about the neighborhood is exactly the same as it is. The neighborhood is frequented by whites and African Americans, and the BOLO is for two whites. Does that change?
If the BOLO was for two whites, yes, I think it's exactly the same.
Even though they're...
But I think it's even stronger here, and it's not that you can't consider ethnicity as a factor. The case made clear that you can. It's not the factor. It shouldn't be the only factor, but it's certainly a factor that can be considered. They met the description of the people who robbed this gentleman. That's the issue. They fit the same description. Now, the fact that the clothes were different, we know why the clothes were different after the fact, because he took off his shirt and dropped it. But we're talking about an officer who has to make a snap decision in deciding what to do.
Well, what happened afterwards is irrelevant for the purposes of our inquiry at this point. The fact that they dropped the clothes, you know, the bottom line is we're talking about the circumstances prior to the officers finding them.
For reasonable suspicion, absolutely. But I would say that I think that there is an issue about what happened afterwards in deciding what needs to be suppressed, because it has to flow. And if we're not talking about the stop, if we're talking about the seizure, if the stop's okay but the seizure's not, we need to know what flowed from that seizure. And I would argue that the defendant's argument precluding consideration of that and how those circumstances played out bars any real analysis by this court on that issue.
Given, and you cite some of them in your brief, the cases that have allowed very aggressive stops fall under a Terry stop paradigm, is the only difference between this being a full custodial arrest at the time the dog is announced and the handcuffs are put on what the officer is allowed to do? He couldn't do a full search at that point because he wasn't arrested, but everything else, as far as the use of how much force he used, is fine. It could be a Terry stop, it could be an arrest. The distinction isn't the amount of force used to effectuate the stop, it is what you are allowed to do once you've effectuated the stop.
I think that's a fair statement, but I do think that the issue here, Your Honor, is that we're looking at a dangerous situation with someone who is alleged to be armed, who has just committed a robbery, which is a violent offense. We have an officer who is at night faced with confronting someone who perhaps appears to have been armed from the information that he had. And so his actions were certainly reasonable at that time. And do not elevate it into an arrest simply because he's stopping, even with a show of force, somebody for a very brief period of time to confirm or dispel his suspicions. And to protect himself because he's approaching someone that he has just had information may be armed. And he has reasonable belief to think that he may be armed. So the fact that he may have said this about the dog, and clearly there are cases that say if you pull your gun and say, you know, you display your gun, that's totally fine. I could find no cases that say that there's something worse about announcing that you're going to release your dog than pulling your gun. I mean, clearly both are a show of force, and that's okay.
By the time he hears the gunshot coming from the direction of the person who ran off, the dispositive factors as to whether the stop was good or not, that's all decided, correct?
Absolutely. And I think that the record is slightly unclear, but the way that I read the record, and I think it goes in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth on appeal, clearly, is that he got out, he announced himself, he may have said whatever he said about the dog at that point, before he put his hand on, certainly before he handcuffed the defendant, he saw the other guy running, because he said the other guy ran as soon as he announced himself. And then, very shortly thereafter, before he handcuffed him, he heard the gunshot. So that was the series of events in time. And certainly, when he sees the guy, the other guy who appears to be traveling with the defendant in headlong flight, at that point, he clearly has more evidence that these are the two guys who are involved in the robbery. And so the handcuffs become more imperative to preserve the status quo at that point. And I would just note, and then of course we have the discarded clothing that's found, and then the statement that's made, although it's impossible, I would say, from this record, to, if the court's issue would to be with the seizure, to determine what has been, what's being suppressed, because we weren't allowed to get into that information during the motion to suppress. And that is something that needs to be on the record on appeal. If the court doesn't have any further questions for me, I would just say, no, we had a be on lookout, same direction, no one else matching that description, 1 minute later, going at a brisk pace, appeared to be traveling together, a block and a half away. All of those factors together add up to reasonable suspicion to stop the defendant.
Very well. Thank you very much. In keeping with the tradition of this court, we will step down and greet counsel in this Merritt case, and then